Hi, everybody. My name's Harold, and I'm an alcoholic. This thing makes me nervous up here. Being taped makes me nervous. Usually I get prosecuted when somebody does that. It's great to be alive. It's great to be free. It's great to be free from alcohol. I like to come to hospitals and I like to go to institutions. I like to see recovery in its various stages, and it doesn't make any difference about the amount of time that we have managed to garner on a daily basis, one day, one month, one year. Sometimes sobriety starts in its infancy again when we wake up, because we have to deal with life on life's terms on a daily basis. It's just a marvelous, marvelous thing to watch and see. So many, many miracles, and I'm very, very grateful to be here, and I'm very privileged to be here. Thank you very, very much. Oh. AA has a hell of a message for people who want it. Not necessarily those who need it, but those who want it. There's living, breathing proof that there's another way to live without alcohol, without the disease, no matter how it manifests itself in your life, if it's philosophical, if it's violent, if it's emotional depression, if it's distress, no matter how it manifests itself in your life, if you're escaping from life through alcohol or through drugs, there's another way to live. And AA generously, lovingly, freely gives that to you. It gives it to me, and I'm very grateful for it. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It's a message of hope, of course. And when I got to AA, I didn't have any hope. I didn't have any hope for anything. None for me, none for the world. I couldn't live in it and didn't know how to live out of it. And I certainly didn't want to take my own life, so I didn't know what to do. Never crossed my mind to do that. I thought I might go out in a blaze of glory. I'd be the biggest mass murderer in the world, and the cops could take me out or something, but I wouldn't hurt me. I might hurt you, but I wouldn't hurt me. If there's one message, one word that I, as a recovering alcoholic, could get across to you today, is that AA works. It works, and it's for real. Usually when I'm asked to tell my story, God, and there's plenty of people in here who could just about tell my story. They've heard it plenty of times. Invariably we'll go back to my childhood, because as time has gone by and I've garnered quite a few days of sobriety, my perception of things, of course, has changed, and I see different aspects of emotional insecurity, fear, deprivation, and a lot of things from a different perspective in my life. I'm a Cabbage Town boy. I was born and raised right here in Atlanta. And for those of you who don't know where Cabbage Town is or what it is, it's fairly much like a white Harlem, a Harlem in New York. An old mill village, and it's rampant with crime, alcohol, drugs, and just about anything you need. You can find it there. Atlanta has plenty of those sections. Cabbage Town, Bellwood, Buttermilk Bottom, Mechanicsville, Pittsburgh, Reynoldstown. They all have their, not necessarily their ethnic pride, Jewish, Polish, Irish, but they have their territorial prides. And I'm from Cabbage Town, and most of my life I have taken a fierce loyalty and a fierce pride that I am a survivor from Cabbage Town. I grew up in a home in Cabbagetown where there was no man, no male role model. And we were the recipients and the objects of church charities, gratuities, and I always felt different about this. I've always felt different, and I can see this now as a recovering alcoholic, that how this feeling different permeated into my life as a child, and it's been with me all of my life. And I hear it a lot around AA meetings now that, you know, I felt like I was different. I felt like I was unique. Well, I understand that now, and I know that even then I felt different and I felt unique. I was very, very ashamed that we were so poor. I was very ashamed that I didn't have a father. I was an illegitimate child. I was very, very ashamed for our living circumstances, and I make no apologies about them today. The first pair of long pants I ever had, a church gave them to me. The Washington Street Assembly of God Church gave them to us. And I wore those pants for two or three times. And in a little cracker box house that we lived in over in Cabbagetown, had like a little heater in the middle room, had a kitchen, and you didn't have nothing in the living room. Everybody, of course, slept and lived in the middle room. You had a heater in there. Well, I washed those pants and threw them on the heater to dry, and they burned. Of course, I was just devastated, heartbroken, didn't know how to deal with it. So I went out at the age of 8 years old, and I did something, and it started a pattern that stayed with me until I found this fellowship. I went out, and I stole me some pants. I went down through another neighborhood that was fairly close, and I went clotheslining. And for people who don't know what clotheslining is, I started going through folks' backyards until I found some clothes hanging around out on the yard, and I found some pants that fit me, and I took them. And I liked that. I didn't have to feel beholden to a church, and I didn't have to be ashamed that somebody had saw me be the object of some sort of charity. And I liked the stealing. It let me get what I want. So I started stealing at about the age of 8. I went to work for a little small Jewish grocery store, and most of the people in Cabbagetown didn't have refrigerators or anything. They, you know, you got a little local grocery store, like over in Vine City and Reynoldstown here, again, all these places. They don't have refrigeration. They get what they need on a daily basis from the local grocery store where they got a small charge account. I started delivering groceries for this little grocery store, and I started stealing wine and drinking wine. I was about 11 or 12 years old, and that's something else that followed me until I found this fellowship. I changed vehicles, of course. The wine used to make me puke an awful lot. So I started drinking other things. But by the age of 12, I was stealing on a daily basis, supporting whatever little childish habits I may have had. And I was drinking, and I liked the drinking because it let me be part of a different world. It let me be part of the world that I saw in my classmates and other children. I could go to school and I could see a child who had a mother and a father, and they ate regular, and they had decent meals, and they had decent clothes, and they didn't have to steal for them, and they didn't have to lie and cheat. And they were loved. At least my perception of things, that these children were loved by their parents. Love was something that was not very prevalent in my life. Wasn't around very much, and I never heard those words very much growing up when they were not used or designed and used as a tool. Harold, I love you. Mac, I love you. Isabel, I love you. I never heard that. Not unless there was a sexual connotation to it, or unless there was a manipulation tool being used. I love you if. I love you when. I love you will you. So I didn't understand this thing. I never had love. But when I drank alcohol at 11 and 12 years old, It let me be loved. It let me be different. It let me be normal. Now, I don't know what the criteria for normal may be. I don't know what anybody's individual idea or perception of normal may be. And it's different for each and every one of us. And the circumstances that have led me to this fellowship are probably very, very bizarre to some of you and very, very different, but they were very normal to me. I left home when I was 12 years old, and I went down to Florida. I went down to Panama City, Florida, and I was a pretty big boy for my age. And I got down there, and I fell in with some boys that were about 16 years old, and they had an old rail job car. And I was drinking, you know, raising hell. And for those of you who don't know what a rail job car is, it's a car that's got a motor and a frame and some seats, no fenders, no floorboards, and nothing like that. Well, we used to drive up over where people change clothes down at the beach, and they'd take their clothes off and their pocketbook and all and leave them on the beach, and they'd go out and swim. Well, we'd drive up over their clothes and reach down through the floorboards, and we'd steal their money. You know, anything to make a buck. Well, we started going around breaking into cars and stealing clothes and cameras. And I'm liking all the stealing, and I'm liking all the drinking. Stealing gets me what I want, and the drinking lets me be what I feel like I want to be. I hadn't been there but a short time, and we broke into an automobile that had a pistol in it. And the boys that I was running around with, they wanted to sell the gun at the pond, at the pool room, and I didn't want to do it. I said, no, we're going to use this pistol. Now, they thought I was crazy, but I was pretty crazy. So I was pretty dominant in the crowd, and I wouldn't let them sell the pistol. I was 12 years old, and I told these fellows that we were going to go down here and rob this liquor store. I'll interrupt my story for just a minute here because I had the privilege of being at an AA meeting not long ago. Well, as a matter of fact, it's been 7 or 8 months now. But there was a young girl who was in a recovery unit, and I think probably here at this hospital. And she went up and she received a 30-day chip. And a fellow that I sponsor was at that meeting with me. He said, how in the hell do you just have 30 days sobriety when you're 12 years old? And I had the privilege of sharing this particular incident that I'm going to share with you now. And he understood about being able to not drink for 30 days at being 12 years old. Because at the age of 12, I performed my first armed robbery with a pistol. We couldn't get up the intestinal fortitude, and if there weren't some children in here, I'd say another part of your anatomy, we couldn't get something up, but to rob the liquor store. But we were riding down the road, and I saw a man coming out of a convenience store, and I jumped out of the car, and I told him, get him up, it's a hold up, do like I say do, and you won't get hurt. And he thought I was kidding, of course. I was just a kid. And he knew right quick that I wasn't kidding, because as soon as I shot right between his legs, he didn't just give me his wallet, he gave me his pants. Now, I really liked that. I was stealing to get what I wanted. I was drinking to let me be something that I wanted to be. And I liked the fact that with a pistol, I had power. I was important. You might not love me, you might not care about me, but you would fear me and you would do like I say do. That's a pattern that stayed with me here again until I got to this Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever we read how it works, before a meeting, of course, at some form or at some part of this form, it says, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. I was out of control ever since total recall, ever since I can remember. I felt unloved, I felt different, and I couldn't connect I had this yearning and I had this desire. I had something inside of me that felt like if somebody could just understand, if I could just connect, if somebody could just understand how I feel, maybe I wouldn't be quite so crazy. Maybe I wouldn't drink quite so much. As time has gone by, and I've had a privilege to be sober a few 24 hours, I can look back now and see that I practiced controlled drinking even at 13, 14, and 15, 16 years of age, because I knew that if I drank too much, I couldn't steal. So I wouldn't get drunk so that I could take care of business. I could go out and rob and do the things that I wanted to do to get me the money that I felt like I needed to have because of poor me. I'm from Cabbage Town. Look at me. I'm an underprivileged kid. And I'm entitled to do this against society and everybody else. By God, I'm going to make them pay. It's their fault. So I practiced controlled drinking even as a teenager. I had my first blackout, I think, when I was about 12 or 13 years old. And I didn't know until I got to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that anybody who got drunk didn't suffer that same malady. I thought that everybody who got drunk or drank to excess, their body continued to function. They continued to consume alcohol or take drugs or whatever vehicle they were using, but they didn't remember. I thought that everybody did that. I had no idea or no way of knowing that everybody that got drunk didn't have blackouts. News to me. I quit school when I was 16 years old. I was a pretty good athlete. I was robbing and had been in and out of the juvenile system two or three times. And I quit school and went to work at that cotton mill. The law was on me again. And I said, well, I'll just give up robbing and I'll slow play my drinking a little bit. I'm tired of being sick. I'm tired of having these periods where I can't remember, and I'll go to work at this cotton mill. Now, I don't know if anybody has anybody in here ever been around a cotton mill? Ever drove by one and saw these guards around the gates and all that stuff? And, well, I went to work at Fulton Bag Cotton Mill. Funny story, man. Funny story. They put me in this bobbin room. Man, in a bobbin room's machine for the women, you know, they're sewing, they got all them little things. But this big spool's a bobbin. And, man, the machines are going like a million miles an hour. And I'm making all this damn noise and the dust and lint and shit's going everywhere. I started getting sick. I started losing my equilibrium, and I went over, and I couldn't hear, and people couldn't hear me. And these guys have been working in there 20, 30 years. They just stand there talking. They can hear each other, and I'm screaming, and they can't hear me. You know, they go, hey, Joe, how you doing? They can hear. I can't hear. I'm getting sick. Man, it's hot. I went over, and I grabbed this guy, and I said, look, man, I got to quit. I'm sick. He says, you can't quit. I said, what the hell you mean I can't quit? He said, you can't quit until the end of the shift. I said, I never heard of a job that you can't quit. He said, that's what the guards are down at the gate. Not to keep people out, they're to keep your ass in. I promptly jumped the fence and went on back to school and became a star. Now, you can forget that shit. No, ain't no way. So I'm getting my pistol and going to get me some money. This is for crazy people. You know, crazy people. No, that ain't my way. And I didn't make that mistake again. I kept that pistol handy. I was a pretty gifted athlete, thank God. I had a scholarship to Clemson University. I didn't get to go. I got married in my senior year, and I joined the Navy. And I was running with a pretty rowdy crowd, and we was doing some robbing and in trouble and out of trouble and some burglary. And they stayed here in Atlanta. They continued to rob and burgle here, and I just robbed and burgled in exotic places. You know, Hawaii, Japan, and, you know, I did some nice robbing all over this country, all over the world. I ended up in some pretty exotic jails on occasion, too. I think I've been in 42 different countries in my lifetime, and I've been locked up in about 20 of them. I managed to get out of the Navy with an honorable discharge, and I came home and I fell in right back with that same crowd. And my pattern in my life, and here again, as I get a little bit more sober, I can see that patterns are so very, very much a part, they are, in fact, my life. Patterns are my life. I fell in with the same crowd, and I continued to burgle and rob and steal and drink and live riotously. I was out of control. I didn't know how to control my life. I didn't know how to control my drinking. I had horrible, horrible blackouts, and I stayed sick a lot. When I wasn't working, somehow or other, I just could never get the two connected. If you're going to perpetrate a crime, you don't drink. I perpetrated the crime long enough to get the money, and then I would stay drunk until I spent the money. Then I would get sober, and it was a vicious cycle. I used to collect in this town for a lot of bookies. You see all these movies about people that get all their arms broke and their collarbones broke and all that stuff. I've done all that. I've done some heinous things, and I have paid the price for it. By the time I was 35 years old, I'd spent 7 calendar years of my life in various penitentiaries. Those are not probated sentences, and those are not suspended sentences. The amount of time that I had received by the time I was 35 was probably like 200-300 years. I've been indicted for murder 3 times. I've been prosecuted for it once. The last time I went to the penitentiary, they had me for importation, conspiracy to distribute, and possession of 12 tons of marijuana, and for murder. If there's a message today from this ex-convict, from this drunk, from this fellow suffering alcoholic, it's to tell you that this program works. I don't know about the success rate. I think it's phenomenal, but it works. Done a lot of insane things, you know. When I came to this fellowship, I thought some people harassed me into coming. And now as I look back over a few years, I can understand that they really loved me and they asked me to come. That's a very key word for me, is love. I don't understand it today. I don't pretend to understand all the connotations and ramifications of the word love. But these people told me that they loved me. And I didn't understand. I've been looking for love my whole life, and I couldn't find it. They told me that they loved me, and I was a pretty nice guy if I just didn't drink too much. So I came to AA, not looking for a way out, not looking for a change, not wanting to do anything except fade a little heat, just get them off my back for a little bit. I, of course, didn't stop drinking because I didn't do anything that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous will tell you to do. I continued to live riotously. I continued to drink. And I used AA as a tool. And if there's some of you in here today that are doing that, this is your second, third, and fourth, and fifth time back in a recovery unit or wherever you're going, and you're bullshitting your family, you're bullshitting people that love you, wake up. If you want to, and if you don't, ride it far as you can. But if you want it to work, it can. I got a little bit ahead of myself. When I came to this fellowship, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. I didn't really believe that. I admitted it, but I didn't accept it, and I didn't understand it. I didn't understand the confusion. I understand today what that means. I was talking to a lovely lady this evening before this meeting started, and she was telling me that the posse might be after some of these folks that's in group number 3. But you can bet your ass the posse's going to get you. I don't care how sober you get if they're coming. You got to deal with it. We don't like to hear that. Not if AA is a 2 or if recovery is a 2. You want to run into the judicial system and say, hey, look, man, I'm an addict. You know, I'm an alcoholic. You got to make an exception for me. Don't you understand? I understand, son. You got drunk and you got in trouble. Your ass is going to straighten up when you get out of jail, ain't you? You know, I had to do that 2 or 3 times. As I said, I was in various penitentiaries. I was in Parchman in Mississippi for armed robbery. And I was locked up for about 2 years down there. I had a 9-year sentence. And I had to get out of jail to get sober. I nearly died in jail. I stayed drunk for 2 years in jail on a daily basis. Most people say, well, man, that ought to be the perfect place to quit drinking is in jail. Wrong. Plenty of dope, plenty of liquor in jail. Homemade potato buck, applejack, whatever you want to do, you can get some smuggling, bonded liquor. And that's the perfect place to stay high and to stay drunk. You know, if you're sitting around nodding, man, you don't give a shit. If you're locked up, you're flying, man. I'm in heaven. It don't matter. They called me about 2 years later, said, Hinton, get your shit. You got to go home. I said, it's good. I'm about to die. Somebody's got to help me. Man, I've been drunk for 2 years. I was glad to get out. I had to go lay up on a damn beach somewhere for about a year and dry out. I nearly died. Penitentiary and whiskey's killing me, man. Get me out and get me a pistol. Get me some money and go lay up somewhere. Never crossed my mind to do something different. Step 2 says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know, I never thought I was insane. I used that excuse a lot. Now, when I went out here and I got a little drunk, went a little crazy, you know, shot a place up or did something like that, you know. Oh, hell, I'm just crazy, you know. There were times when I doubted my sanity. But here again, that was a tool that I used against society and people that cared about me. Was my drunkenness, my alcoholic tendencies, my behavioral patterns, and the fact that I said, well, sometimes I'm crazy. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, I didn't believe I was insane. My definition of insanity was where they take you, put you in a white straitjacket, and they run you down here to Milledgeville, and they give you the Thorazine, and shoot you in a little hip and get you a little high, and, you know, take you a little pill and run you in there and give you some shock treatments and give you some Georgia power instead of higher power. You know, you get what you need. You know, I didn't know. You know, so I that was my definition of insanity. But now, today, I know that the definition of insanity for an alcoholic is for me to continue to do the same things in the same manner and yet expect different results. That's, if I continue to drink, I'm going to get drunk. If I continue to rob, I'm going to go back to prison. You know, if I don't have a spiritual awakening that I am in desperate, desperate trouble. I have gone through periods of total abstract insanity in the respect that I've done things in blackouts and not ever remembered them. I have woke up out of a blackout married. And did not know it. I have been married 10 times. A lot of drunken marriages, man, I'm telling you. You know, you get drunk, you're having a good time. Hell, we'll just fly out to Vegas and get married. You know, you wake up. We better get on home to the kids. What kids? Well, don't you remember we got married? We're going to get a divorce. Costly. Crazy as hell. No, that ain't insane. That ain't insane. Bizarre behavior, drinking behavior, drunk behavior. You don't get off into a drunk log. I used to date this girl named Mary Ann, was a bartender right here. Sheraton. I carry a pistol. I always carry, wear a shirt that you can unbutton. I got a pistol. Anytime I got my shirt unbuttoned, I got a pistol right there. Fact to life, as long as I live till I die. It's going to be one right there. I go in. I just took me off a score, and I got my pocket full, right? Mary Ann, give everybody in here a drink. Now, she knows that I'm crazy as hell. She starts sitting up and gives everybody a drink. She comes back with a tab. She says, $50. I said, honey, that ain't enough money. She said, everybody in here's got a drink. I said, I don't mean in here. I mean in the hotel. Bus boys, bell boys, people going crazy. Come back with a bar bill, it's $811. More like it. Now, that's crazy. I used to go in the Waffle House and say, give me one of everything in here. Bring me that first. I was crazy as hell and didn't care. You get in my face, I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to go back to penitentiary. I know how it is in there. It don't make no difference. I was out of control. I am an alcoholic. I am a bona fide, genuine alcoholic. And you don't have to be a bizarre behavior nut to be an alcoholic, to have this disease. By God, it just happened to be crazy in me. You know, I've got a couple of friends that are alcoholics and they're recovering, but by God, they were weeping willies. Get drunk, want to cry. I got drunk, want to raise hell. You know, I don't know. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened and what we're like now. I could go on and on and on and on about all the bizarre things that happened to me or that I created. And you can't, you know, I can't sit around sometimes and tell myself, man, I didn't have a hell of a high old time. But I wouldn't change a thing today. I have done some things that people who know me say I ought to write a book about. If I ever do, I got the perfect title. And the title will be, This Ain't No Shit. Good book. I came to this fellowship at the insistence of some people who said that they loved me. And here again, I didn't know how to communicate that to my dense brain. I heard the words and I didn't understand it. I came around Alcoholics Anonymous and I saw a bunch of people that I liked, people that I could use, that I could con and that I could manipulate. It was a two-sided coin and both sides were heads and I could use both of them. I could come around and get slapped on the back and praised by you all. I didn't drink for a while because y'all expected me not to. And I went home and got glad-handed and slapped on the back because they were expecting me to not drink. And I thought, well, this is great. The next time I wanted to slip off and get drunk and go do a robbery or stay gone for 2 or 3 weeks or have a little bit of fun, I could come on back home. Been gone 3 weeks. Where in the hell you been? Well, I just been drunk. You know, I'm an alcoholic. That's how we are, don't you know? I'm an alcoholic. That's how we are, don't you know? My reward, I was looking for this big payday for not drinking. I'd been sober about, well, I had been dry for about 14 or 15 months. And if there's some people in here who are contemplating or who are bullshitting yourselves, and you're not doing what this program suggests that you do, let me encourage you to do it. Do what they say. No matter how confused you might be by how it works, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, don't drink, go to meetings, it'll get better. For God's sakes, hang around and listen and be willing I hung around, but I was not willing and I didn't listen. I did not drink for about 14 months. Now, of course, I went around all the same old places. And if any of you have tried that before, you know, you go popping in with some lounge, hey, man, you ain't drinking stills. And no, goddamn, you strong, man. I like it. It's good for your ego, right? And you come on back in there 4 months later and you're drunk as a dog. Hell, you held out longer than I could. Boy, I like that, you know. You like that, and I liked all that. I stayed dry about 14 months. And people who loved me, this fellowship, they could see that something was wrong, that I wasn't right. There was no spiritual awakening. Things weren't happening for me. I couldn't connect. Man, that connection was out there. That cord was out there, but it wouldn't get plugged in. I didn't have the right hold. I wouldn't turn the right way. I went down to the NABBA Club, and if Joe H. is in here, I saw him before the meeting. He and Gus J. and Billy McCann and a bunch of people were down there. The Thursday night closed men's meeting at the NABBA Club. It's my home group. I went down there and I had been dry for about 14 months. And I said, you people are full of crap. AA don't work. You lied. Of course, I lied a lot, too. They say, are you working the steps? Yep. Got a sponsor? Yep. Do you four-step inventory? Yep. I lied. Well, I was sick, son of a bitch. I lied. And even when I did the first one, even when I wasn't sober, I did my first four-step, man, I made it some big fabulous fairy tale. You know, like I was the son of long-lost czar of Russia, and, you know, I was deprived. Man, it's a weird, bizarre story. Weird, bizarre story. I told these fellas in AA, I said, y'all are lying, it don't work, and I'm going to go get drunk. So we'll be here when you get back. I mean, this is Harold now. Y'all ain't going to stop me from going and get drunk. We love you, man. You don't have to live that way no more, but we'll be here when you get back. I stayed drunk pretty much on a daily basis for the next 5 years. I ended up in a United States federal penitentiary out here at the end of the boulevard, here again for possession of marijuana, 12 tons, and for murder. I was looking at a fresh 25 years. I pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter, received 5 on that, 20 years on the conspiracy and various and assorted charges. I had been around the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous off and on now for about 5 years. And it had not taken effect and it had not taken a hold. I would not allow it to, and I didn't know what to do about it. Because if you've been around this program and you've been out drinking, by God, it screws your drinking up. There's no question about it. It's a miserable feeling. I woke up in the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. And just the most overwhelming fear came over me. Now that penitentiary is built for 1,400 inmates and there was like 2,400 out there when I grew up. I mean, when I drove up out there. And I knew about 700 of them. I mean, you know, I went checking into A&O down there. Well, you're going to R&D and then go to A&O and... people come by, have you had supper? No, man, we'll get the sandwich man down here and get old Red to be your laundryman, cost you a box of cigarettes a month, and look, old Gimpy over here's got 600 years and 19 life sentences. If you want to get somebody killed, he's the man to do it about, you know. And, I mean, you know how to get around in the system. So I woke up in the penitentiary again, looking at another 25, and I'd been around AA off and on for about 5 years, and I was laying in my cell, and this just God-awful fear came over me. Not fear being hurt. I mean, hell, I've been shot twice, been stabbed about 15 times. I mean, you know, those really probably pretty stupid, but I don't get scared much physically. But this fear came over me, got me to thinking, if I don't stop drinking, I may not ever be able to quit. And if I drink again, I'm lost. And man, I mean, I just broke out in a cold, clammy sweat. I asked God to help me, as I had been instructed to do around this program. I said, God, I don't want the walls to fall down. I don't want anything to change in my life. I just don't want to drink anymore. And they didn't. I have seen a man inside this penitentiary. I've been to a few AA meetings in there. And this fellow, black man, Steve C., and he's a super, super nice guy. He was at peace, and that was the connection that I needed. I needed some serenity, and I needed some peace in my life. It was full of turmoil. I was full, just full of this overwhelming ache, this loneliness, or this need to say to somebody, for God's sakes, listen to me. Somebody help me. I love you, but I don't know what in the hell to say or do about it. And I just want to find peace. In my most sincere, humblest moment, I guess, that I could ever say ever happened to me in my whole life, when I asked God to help me stay sober on a daily basis, I didn't get far from here, this podium, to the front of this stage, and that I doubted my own sincerity. That's the cunning, baffling, powerful part that we see in how it works. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I knew that I wanted to change. My moment of decision had come, and I had surrendered. It wasn't a matter of surrender. I had my ass kicked. I thought that God didn't hear me. And by the time I got to the front of my cell, I said, I know I'm lying. I know I'm going to get drunk. What the hell am I going to do? And then I was worried, really worried. AA don't work. What the hell am I going to do? So I went to see this guy. And I asked him, I said, Steve, I said, I just asked God to help me stay sober on a daily basis. This fellow had been in penitentiary at that time about 14 years, undergone some unbelievable adversities, and had come through not smelling like a rose, but by God in command and on top and in charge of his life. And I said, Steve, I said, I just asked God to help me not drink on a daily basis. And I don't think he heard me, but you got a hell of a life going for you, and I think he'll listen to you. How about praying for me? I don't know what I expected. I've shared it before. I don't know if I expected some sort of a Billy Graham or Oral Roberts evangelistic oratorical prayer or hallelujah, brother, but he said, God, this dude don't want to drink anymore on a daily basis. Help him a day at a time. I said, that's it? He said, that's it. Well, you know, the magic must have worked. The magic must have worked. June the 26th of this year, I've been sober for 9 years. It's the longest time, and I've been out of the penitentiary about five. It's the longest time in my entire life since I was 12 years old that I have not been out on parole, that I have not been on bond, that I'm not awaiting another trip to the penitentiary, that I am not, in fact, plotting to rob, steal, loot, rape, ravage, and live righteously. This program and this fellowship works because it's divinely inspired. I have a higher power today in my life I choose to call God. I don't think that it's sissified anymore to say I believe in God and that I want God's will in my life for me today. I have two grown daughters. I have a grandchild. I have a nice, respectable job. I have self-respect. I have integrity. I have loyalty to this fellowship. so many, many, many wondrous things have happened to me. I could not begin to tell you. Perhaps the most profound thing, and I know we're out of time, people are starting to get antsy and you're looking. The most profound thing that has happened to me as a result of being sober on a daily basis is, of course, that there's God in my life. Second, that I have the capacity to love and be loved. I don't have any trouble at all sharing on a one-to-one basis with my sponsor. I don't lie anymore. I do have a sponsor. I do work the steps. And I'm at peace. If you're sitting here in this hospital and you've been here before, or if it's your first trip and you don't want to come back and you can't find something to fill this kind of hole in your soul, this gnawing, gaping void in your life, give God and AA a chance. Don't worry about the fact that you might be confused here again about the paperwork. No rules, no regulations. Be willing. Be willing. I dare anybody, to just become willing. Okay? Okay, God. I'm willing. I'll do these steps. By God, whenever the chance comes, I'll do these steps. Your life will get better from that minute on. You make book on it. You can take it to the bank. Just be willing to do it, and it will change. Your life will change. People that are new in their infancy and their sobriety, they don't want to hear, well, by God, I don't want my life to change. I just don't want to drink so much, or I just don't want to do drugs. Don't even let that part scare you. When you hear around AA, your life's going to change. But I guarantee it will. Because I didn't set out to not be a burglar, not be a smuggler, not be a murderer. All I wanted to do was not drink on a daily basis. I wanted to be a sober burglar, smuggler, murderer. But I don't live that way anymore today. And I don't have to. I have integrity. I have respect, I have loyalty, and above all, I have love, and I have love for a God of my understanding. And I love you, and I thank you for letting me be here.